Hello, and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast, where we have conversations about Kenpo and learn about practitioner's journey. I'm Reggie Darden, and I have with me Scott Marker, a high-ranking black belt in Kenpo, and we're just going to have a little chat and just talk about Kenpo and whatever else happens to come our way, and we'll just kind of go from there. Just to kind of give a little bit of my story, I originally started in Kenpo in the mid-90s, I guess probably around 93, 94. I started at a school that we called it Chinese Kenpo. I like to think of it as maybe a Ed Parker 1.0, but it essentially was a Tracy school. So I trained there, I guess about 3 years or so, got about halfway through green belt, and then I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, just dabbled a little bit in Taekwondo and Hapkido and boxing a little bit. After I got out of the military, I wanted to continue training, but couldn't find a school that that I liked. So I just kind of did a little bit of practicing on my own. Then I got into doing capoeira, and I've been doing that for about 17 years now. As far as getting back into the Kenpo journey, I found an American Kenpo school here. I'm in Dallas, Texas, and I started, I guess, about two or three years ago, and I've just been really loving it. One of the big differences that I've noticed at the school that I'm at now is that really leaning into, you know, the Ed Parker principles and philosophies and that structure was really eye-opening to me. In my previous school, you know, much love to them, but you know, we didn't do freestyle, we didn't do the sayings, we didn't do the pledges, we didn't do any of the terminology. So I feel like now I've just gotten into so much more, I've gained so much more knowledge by the time I got to orange belt than, you know, I did being almost a brown belt before. So that's been really eye-opening experience for me. Just loving the training and loving hearing people's stories about how they got into, you know, not just Kenpo, but martial arts. And just, you know, love talking to people. So that's why I now have this podcast going, and just want to, you know, hear people's stories, and hopefully others will be able to get something out of this as well. So Mr. Marker, I will throw it over to you to just tell us when, you know, when, how you got started in Kenpo, and when you got started, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Perfect. Thanks for having me, Richie. This is what I love to talk about Kenpo. I'm hoping today to bring some unique angles to it that maybe people haven't heard before, and then also some great stories from founding Grandmaster Ed Parker. And one thing I want to say up front, I like on social media stuff, I always put founding. I got this from Dennis, Senior Grandmaster Dennis Canaster. And he said he likes to call him founding Grandmaster. So that's what I always call him out of respect. But to make it flow better, I'm going to say Ed Parker sometimes, and I'm not going to say founding Grandmaster every single time. Just that, no disrespect. Just want to say that up front.
No,
so
that's great.
I started when I was, geez, I'm talking seventh grade, and there was a guy here named John LaDorette, and he had like a 6-month introductory course or something like that. So I started with him. My grandpa took me down there, and then it just wasn't a fit for me. And again, I was, you know, seventh grader or something like that. And then years later, I was at a tournament, and there was a guy there that was really good at sparring, and his name was Daryl Little. And I started under him, and then he actually ended up underneath another Kenpo guy for a while, and then finally ended up going underneath Skip Hancock. And again, it's like Skip Hancock, you know, Grandmaster Skip Hancock. And so then So that's how we got, like in 1983 was the first seminar Ed Parker came here. And I think he came here actually from John Lauderette. And so, but even though I was under him, that was just years before. And so Ed Parker was here and Skip was here, Daryl was here. And we were called Idaho Freestyle. So we were doing some of the forms and stuff, but we fought a lot. And he ended up being a full contact fighter. So our school, even at one of the seminars, Ed Parker years later said, oh, they're a fighting school. Yeah. You know, they might not have the best forms, but man, they can fight. And so I like that. So that was kind of the background. And then Daryl ended up getting, years later, ended up getting cancer, unfortunately, but he made it through, but it was rough. And so he left. And then Ruland Day, who's one of my good friends, he kind of took over the school. And then I kind of was an assistant instructor underneath him. And through that, we just got exposed. Oh, and then that's when I actually, both of us went underneath Skip Hancock. And so, and Skip was, you know, helped Ed Parker proof his books and all types of stuff. And how do I know that? Because, which I'll get to, I heard Ed Parker and him talk about, hey, thanks for proofing that part. What would you think? And they talked back and forth. So Skip a lot of times would help proof a lot of his stuff he wrote. Anyway, so we went underneath him. And then I kept going to Ed Parker seminars every time they were around. And he just took a liking to me. And I think also I kind of, it was funny prepping for this podcast, I kind of went back and kind of made a list of all my stories and stuff. I'm like, wow, what an honor, you know? Anyway, so I just have some great stories. So I started going down in 85, I went to the internationals for the first time and we slept, Skip, I went with Skip. And then he had some other students and his students, I was out of Boise, Idaho. And then I was, you know, his student. And then we had our school and then he brought his students from Spokane. So he had some of them go down there and then we spent the night on the Pasadena mats. And then we started kind of going over to help Ed Parker and his family kind of, I don't know what you call it, but bring out all these boxes in his backyard. Ooh. And I mean, Elvis Presley's Cadillac is right off here to the right of us. And it was just, I mean, I idolized Ed Parker. So it was like, you know, I was like a green belt or something at that time. And it just was just surreal being around his family. Hey, how you doing? His wife, Lalani and Beth and Ed Parker Jr. really wasn't around that much. He was at the internationals, but he just wasn't too much help in setup and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, but through that, I did that 5 years in a row and it was just unique. I'll kind of tell you a couple of things. For example, one thing happened was one year, and I'm not sure which year it was, but, he said, hey, can you do me a favor and, go with, and I think it was Darlene, but go over with Darlene or Beth, it was one of them, over to the Long Beach Arena and take pre-registration money. So I went over there, and I'm not kidding you. We had a little metal box, and there was so much money that I was stuffing it in my pocket. I'm not kidding you. It was mad. And he gave me a taser because he told me to watch over her, make sure nothing happened to her. You know, he didn't say anything. He just said it really. And I'm thinking, looking back, I'm thinking he should have gave me a gun. It was just a different world back then. But that's when he started. There was those type of things that I was such an honor because he just had such faith in me. I idolized him. And so there's, you know, a story. And then another time, this was, I actually had to check the dates on this. This was probably in 89. Anyway, I think it was. Anyway, so again, he comes up to me and says, hey, you going to do me a favor? He said, there's a martial arts movie star here. And he says, I don't know if he can fight. And he goes, you know, he can defend himself. Plus, I don't want some crazy person in the crowd going after him. So could you just watch him for me and make sure nothing goes wrong? I said, sure. So he goes over to him, introduces me to him. And then this movie star wants to go over and, you know, hand out photos, which I have one of the photos, a black and white photo of the movie. And so I go, okay. So I take him clear to the back of the arena in the corner. So it's all blocked, you know, no one can get behind us. And we set everything up so that we had single file. Somebody could come around and get a picture with them. It was anyway. And then, so this, I'll tell you a couple other things, but I'll go to the end quick is I didn't know who he was, but it was Jean-Claude Van Damme from Onis movie Kickboxer. And so, and I talked to Dennis Ganacher about this. And again, grandmaster, you know, senior grandmaster, but we talk all the time. Great guy. And he's if you want to talk, you want to get somebody about the history of Kenpo, bring him on here. He's like an encyclopedia of Kenpo. He knows everybody, everything. Anyway, he was there that time.
He's definitely someone that I definitely want to speak with.
He'll come on too. He's a friend of mine. He's a great guy. So, and funny as hell. and so I would have someone come around, and a lot of women would come around, and he had like these denim jeans on and a shirt, you know, kind of a Western type shirt on. Mm-hmm. And she'd say, could you do something? And I'm at the tables right in front of him. He picked his leg up to his chest and shot it out. And he's hugging her. I'm like, holy smokes, that guy's flexible. And then, So we probably did that for, I don't know, close to an hour. I don't know what it was. And then they announced that Jean-Claude Van Damme is giving out photos and letting people take pictures. A freaking riot. It was just massive amounts of people. And this is where Dennis Knatzer didn't know the full story because he was so proud of himself that Ed Parker asked him to go protect Jean-Claude. No, it was because it was chaos there. He called other people and they helped me out. And it was just a mess because it was like women and children just all wanting his autographs. I mean, just it was just chaos. So that was my claim to fame on that. It was like a great story there. And then it was just kind of cool again because I idolized him. And so there's a story after a story. So like and then I'll get into some Kenpo stuff. But just these are some great stories of Ed Parker that are just what a great guy he is. One time, we're getting ready for the internationals. It's busy as heck. Everyone's, you know, before we go down there at his house, it's just a big, you know, getting all the boxes done and running around. Doorbell rings and it's Elvis Presley's fan club, bunch of women. Mm. And he goes, oh, I'll give you some time. So we're running all around like crazy people. And he brings them in there and just they sit down and just ask some questions about Elvis Presley in his living room or family room up there in the front. And so that was kind of cool. He had his cape there. I got a picture with that. Sunglasses are there. And then one time he said something about Elvis Presley, or I said something. And he says, yo, you want to see something? And he runs upstairs, comes back downstairs and shows me, I'm trying to think, I think the necklace was for his wife. It's in his book, his Elvis book. But anyway, he shows me this thing Elvis got him and shows me all the Elvis just got him a lot of stuff. Anyway, so it's fun things. And again, I'm like a green belt, you know, and he just treats me so nicely. One time he mentioned something and the thing was Skip, when I went down there, I was the consistent one and Skip, but I was a consistent one down there always helping out. So that's why I think looking back, I think he took a liking to me because I was helping him out and his family liked me. And especially Bodie, his son-in-law, Beth's husband, really liked me because I collected all that stuff and we would be digging stuff up and all of a sudden there'd be a 1965, international program. He goes, you want this? I'm like, yeah. And then he took me up front and their house and Ed Parker's house and up front there. And because he knew I collected stuff and he opened up this thing, went in there and there were just stacks of magazines and programs and it was rotten, some of it rotten away. He just kind of picked down a couple and goes, how about that? You want that? How about that? He gave me a whole bunch of stuff, which I thought, anyway, I was just a big collector of him. So another kind of cool thing is somehow I brought up, I heard that he played an instrument or something. So he ran and got his ukulele and I can't remember what Beth played, but he played it in his living room. And I asked Skip, like years later, I said, I don't remember you being there. He goes, I think I was sleeping. But he sat there and it might have been someone else there. I don't remember. All I know is the way he played it was just, he banged turn his hand over and whack it on the ukulele. It was just cool. I mean, again, all this stuff, just fun stuff. Anyway, and so just it really means a lot. So looking down here at the list is one time he said, "Hey, can you help me get ready to go?" And I said, "Sure." So I go up to his bedroom and he gives me his gi, his belt. And I've heard other black belts say, "No one could carry," you know, they call him old man. A lot of a lot of people said, "No." And I'm not, because I'm still, you know, anyway, I'm not going to say nothing to rock the boat, but I'm like, I carried it, you know. And he put some shoes on and said, "Man, these are tight. Hey, you want to try them on?" I put them on. He goes, and they were a little bit big. He goes, "How they fit?" I said, "Perfect." He goes, "You can have them." Anyway, that's, so it's kind of cool. Cool.
Pretty stuff. Generous.
Yeah. That's, so, it just lots of cool stories. One time we were in the back, he was going to do a demo, and Mike Pick, Mike Pick was back there, you know, senior grandmaster. Mike Pick was back there in the back. We were very back in the arena. It was me, Louis Marbach, and Mike Pick and Ed Parker. And again, I'm just, what am I doing back there? Just he asked me to come help him do stuff, and I just do whatever he wanted. So I'm in the back of the arena. No one's back there. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there, and Louis Marbacher sitting next to me. And all of a sudden, Ed Parker just kind of drops back and then starts. And if you've ever seen that little demo thing, it's a Larry Tatum. He's on it, and he's in the Pasadena school, and he drops back and does that form. I don't know if you've ever seen it. You got it. If you haven't seen it, that's probably, yeah. He did something real similar to that. It was freaky. And we're sitting there, and he's going, bop, 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 all this stuff, and nicking my freaking nose. And I'm like, and then he spun around and he went back over to Louis and did the same thing and spun back around. And then he tiptoed off. Who knows? He probably did it a minute or two. I don't know how long. But he did that, and he tiptoed off, and he goes, "I think I'm ready." I thought that was, again, it's all this again, I was someone who I just totally idolized. I got to give you two other quick ones, and then I'll talk. Stories.
Go ahead.
So one of them was Skip Hancock and I were, again, I was just a little, you know, helper falling around, you know, that we were up at his motel room, and he was getting ready for a seminar, and there was professional wrestling on the TV. So I was kind of watching it, and there was a guy on there that would do like a Star Trek Vulcan thing. I don't know. He'd like grab the guy's shoulder a certain way, and the guy would like freeze up. And Ed Parker kind of looked at it and laughed and said, "Hey, that's crazy stuff. We should learn that stuff." So then at the seminar, he comes up to me and goes, "So have you got it down yet?" I go, "What?" He goes, "You've been practicing that move." I go, "The professional what?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "We got to get that down, man. That's a secret move." And so he goes, "Come on." And he has me, we start practicing that stupid move, and somebody got a picture of it. So we're both sitting there anyway, just crazy stuff that, again, I'm just a color belt, and he just took a liking to me. At the seminars, many seminars, he would say, "Hey, I need a victim. Oh, I need a volunteer." And he goes, "Hey, Scott." And he liked me just because I made him look good. I was a good body for him, and he whacked on me a lot. Hey,
nothing wrong with that.
So here's one. Here's one other one. How many people can say that Ed Parker asked them if they could go to a movie with him? They did me. I just called Skip up and just kind of talked to him about it, because I was making sure the movie, because the date, you know, he passed away in 90. So I knew anyway. So I was right on the movie, because I was like, that was movie. But anyway, so what happened was we like went to the seminar, and then went to a dinner, and then I don't know what they're going to do, sit around there forever or whatever. And I told Ken, Kent Martin, a friend of mine, who is also same color belt as me. And I said, "Hey, Ken, I'm going to go to Total Recall." And they were all going to go somewhere. And Ed Parker goes, "Hey, can I go with you? I want to see that movie. That's Arnold." I said, "What am I going to say?" Right?
Exactly.
So he goes with us. So we drive him there, and everybody from the seminar is behind us going to the movie. And he said, and I said, "I bought popcorn. You want some popcorn?" And he's eating my popcorn. And anyway, it was, again, I'm just like, I so there's all these crazy stories. So Anyway, there's enough of those stories. I got, like I said, those are just looking back. I couldn't believe just how much faith he had in me, and trust. He just for a short time, he had me hold a bunch of money. I mean, he had me do that the night before. That was a ton of money. Trusted me with that. Trust me with his daughter. Trust me with that. And then he had me hold a suitcase, and it was like, it was full of money because of the anyway. So I'm just looking back, I'm like, man, that guy, he was my idol. So one time you'll like this. When Leilani was alive, he was like giving us orders. Skip students and I go, we need to get this done, get that done. And his wife goes, hey, he's not like, I can't remember. I don't want to say, I thought she said something, not bad, but because they were religious. Anyway, but she just basically said, hey, he's not your freaking boss. You don't have to do what he says. And we're all just going, oh, yes, our brains. Oh, yes, we do. So anyway, let me give you a fight story. I've heard a lot of fight stories, but I heard it from her who was there. So it must have been a long while back. But somehow, I don't know, talking about fights or something, and she goes, "Oh, I was one time when he got in a fight." I said, "Oh, what was that?" And I'd heard this story, but when you hear it from someone who was there, it's a different thing. So they're driving down the road, and this car is swerving into him, and she said, "I'm hoping," I can't remember what she used to call Ed Parker, but her husband Ed, I don't remember, but she says, "I was hoping he didn't notice." And he looks over and does this and pulls over she said a drive-in, but I think she means like a restaurant drive-in. It sounded like there's gravel there and stuff. And this is something I'd never heard before, is I can't remember how many guys there were, two plus, start getting out of the car. And then Parker starts to get out, and there was somebody or one or two people, guys that were with him. And they said, hey, you need help? And Parker says, I'll call you if I need you. And gets out, hits the first person, and he drops she said it was terrible. He's dropped, just done. And then he went after the other ones, because it's been years and years ago, and kind of beat them up. And they waited around because the one guy wasn't moving. So once he started moving and coming back awake, he started cussing. And then Parker, and then Mrs. Parker saying, then you hit him a few more times. Anyway, so there's a kind of a crazy story of going back in there. So, like I said, yeah. And yeah. So now we'll get into the Kimpo stuff. My background on this stuff is that I followed, I was influenced by senior grandmaster Mike Pick. I watched him a few times and just watched him, the way he moved and stuff. And he really transformed the way I do stuff. But Skip, when it comes to self-defense and stuff like that, Skip, and self-defense, I give credit for Skip because his students, they were the Flames at Parker's demo team. They were they were a next level just accurate, not sloppy, just very accurate. They inspired me. And then Mike Pick inspired me because he had like a different movements. He was a lot more about power. And that's why I wanted to kind of copy that part of it. And anyway, so that influenced me when I was coming up through. And I pretty much followed like Ed Parker's, philosophies and all that stuff, even though we were more of a fighting school as I went along. We're trying to get the belts and all the stuff. And so much for that, I have, look over there. That international trophy, I don't remember. I won at least, it's color belt. I won at least 8 times, I think 10. But over the years traveling, one of my family members, all the ones who are up in the attic, they put them all in one trophy. But what I was most proud of is self-defense division, which again, I give Skip a lot of credit because the way they did their, I emulated the way they did their self-defense. And I got really good at it. And for 1 year, I'm trying to remember which year it was. 1 year, there was a bunch of people. I mean, a ton of people showed up for brown belt for self-defense. And I went first. That's like the curse of death.
Yeah.
That's
a curse of death. You don't want to go first.
And I won. And so then I think it was the next year, Ed Parker said, hey, you're going to be doing, you know, when you do self-defense, he goes, I want to come watch you. Man, the pressure was on. And so, And so I won that year too. So I won 2 years in a row in the brown belt self-defense. And I was really, really proud of that just because, I never went down there. I went all 5 years. I brought home, you know, one or two, three trophies every time. I also think that's that kind of, anyway. So I doing all the Kempo stuff. And then I got my black belt, I think in 1992. And then I recently, in the last year, I went back and looked at my certificate. Paul Mills was there. He signed it. John Sepulveda, he signed it. Beth Parker was there because, you know, Ed Parker had passed in 90. And so I was like, wow. So when I got my, I was always looking for, because I come from a fighting background. My neighbors were boxers, you know, a boxing coach, and I sparred all the time. So I was heavily towards just, you know, realism, you know what I mean? Pressure, being pressure tested. And so, when he passed, Ed Parker passed, it kind of like, I don't know what it was. It just that, then I kind of started looking around on my own. And, in 93, I think it was 93, I had a friend that I was out looking, you know, going to Wally J's seminars and, you know, just trying to figure out just some other stuff to add to my game. And, someone gave me In Action, Gracie In Action tapes, and I watched those and it transformed me. I went, I got to do that. And so I bought the basic tapes. And then, in the UFC happened November of, 93. And then a couple months later, February 94, my buddy opened up Inside Kung Fu. Closest Gracie Jiu-Jitsu black belt was in, Orin, Utah, Pedro Sauer. And so I called him up and my friend called him up first and then had me turn it over to me. And, he couldn't hardly speak English. And, anyway, so I kind of started all that here. And then, so what I started doing was, and then that got me involved in MMA stuff here. So in the Treasure Valley, I kind of, for sure in the Treasure Valley, I brought, at least made it popular, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu here. No one was doing it. And on a big scale, I was going around to all the schools, having to come in there. So what I started doing was Skip Hancock he did them forever, but he'd do these gatherings and his students or students of students, sometimes from around the world, would come once a year. And I taught, he always had me teach. I started teaching at a brown belt. And I started adding in submissions. And then pretty soon I started teaching groundwork. And I actually helped Skip, I think in 99, basically go through, me and a couple of my Ruling Day, my good friends, longtime, instructor and Joe Jones. And, we kind of went through and said, okay, for a blue belt, what do you need for a blue belt? So we kind of, I told Skip, we're never going to get people to add ground in unless we force them to. And so to get your belt, you're going to have to learn this stuff. So we started introducing that and basically it was just failed Kempo techniques, you know, dance of death. And then they drug you down with them, you know? Yeah. So that's all we did was, so we just went, by the time you get to brown, you're going to roughly be a blue belt worth of material. And so I started teaching Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, some MMA stuff at a lot of the seminars in standing up on the ground. Like for Kempo, for example, Joe Jones and I, it was early 2000s, is we went back through all the hugs and holds and then the attempted chokes or whatever they were, anything to do with that type of stuff, locking horns. And now we're doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for years now. So that's the challenges of some people. If you've been really choked over and over and over again, you can better defend it versus if you just pretend to defend it. And so we took the framework of like all the, you know, hug arms in, arms out, a lot of the Kempo type stuff and added a little bit, just took all those things and stripped them down and said, okay, no striking. We're going to do them just with leverage. And then we use basically Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and then we'd add back in the strikes and stuff. But the whole time here, And for the most part, people respected me. I got some pushback because Damon Tong, which is out of Spokane, Washington, I was up at one of his black belt tests once on the panel, and he said that he wanted to thank me for changing his martial arts. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. I'm glad I did. You know, I didn't. He goes, because I was at a gathering and Scott was teaching some grappling stuff, ground stuff. And me and some other people, he was a flame too. He goes, started going, well, yeah, but we're going to pull your hair, poke your eye, kick you in the groin, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I had forgotten this because I got some of these happen, not a lot, but sometimes. And he said, you know, I said, okay, come on out, Damon. Let's see what you can do. Go poke my eye and kick my ear. And he goes, Scott took me down and tapped me out. And I go, it couldn't have been that easy. And then I did it again. And anyway, so, but the thing that people don't understand is that I'm not anti-Kempo. I'm like, here's the deal is Ed Parker's teaching methodologies were brilliant. I think a lot of that was because he's very religious. He didn't, at least in the seminar stuff, I didn't hear him talk a lot. I mean, he did, Jesus Christ stuff, but just not a lot. But the telling the stories and stuff like that, I really think he was influenced by that. And mm-hmm. he used to tell analogies and metaphors and to teach his concepts, both just concepts, you know, thinking concepts, and also physical motion. And so all I did was say, wow, he gave me such a gift over the years. Now, Skip did some of that too, but focus on Ed Parker, because I just idolized him to death, is I would teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and some other stuff using his teaching methodologies. And so I'm like, I'm not going to get caught up I'm not going to get caught up in saying, oh, I have to do this technique this exact same way. I did it for mm-hmm. years like that. I just feel for me and some other people, I think this way increases your chances of success. That's all I used to do. And so, or there's like, for example, for years we did kicking set and stuff. And I said, what the heck are you guys doing? You got to kick something. So we started doing kick set and then doing with bags. And then I came up with kick set G, like one and G two. And all mm-hmm. the first one was just kicking set on the ground. And man, and I had a guy that was Randy Anderson, who was a black belt in Kempo. And just, I mean, he was like one of the last guys that knew every single technique exactly the way it was and perfect. And he could kick like a mule. So he helped kind of us understand how the kicks change on the ground and how you can, the bases and how you can base better and stuff. So I got videos, and anybody wants to see videos on this, I got tons of videos, just looking videos of a lot of these techniques I'm talking about. Almost all the ones we added to the system are on there, and the kicking sets are too. And then my second set was, and again, we do them in the air, but then we do them on it with a bag. And it yeah. totally changes the way you do stuff. It just totally, oh, yeah. In fact, Rulin said, I was training some of the kids, and he said he couldn't believe how much better it was helping the kids standing up. It was because just kicking stuff. Anyway, so rather than, I mean, being negative on me, I'm one of Ed Parker's biggest fans. I mean, I idolized him. And what he gave me as a gift was teaching that how to break down things. And I've written two books. That's my last book behind me. And they're on marketing and sales. And I give him credit for me being able to teach marketing and sales the way I do, because it's using logic and brain. And like, for example, I used to say sophisticated basics, but the sophisticated and basics kind of, so I change it to refined basics. But mm-hmm. I would tell people like Brazilian, I'd be training non-Kempo people, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu people, and other black belts and stuff would copy my teaching because they liked it so much, just saying, refined basics, and this goes back to my Kempo background. Refined basics are learning a move you know, and, you know, and not learning six new moves, but learning six new details or three new details to a move you already know to make it better. And it's just, it's a whole, and all that stuff was heavily influenced by Ed Parker. So no disrespect at all, just because I chose to do other physical motion to handle confrontations versus mm-hmm. sticking straight to the old stuff. So I don't, you know, I did years anyway. I just like, so that's where I get. And then over the years, I had more and more people that at times were like pushing back to me, coming back and saying, hey, I really appreciate you, Scott, because you've helped me a lot, because by doing some ground, it's helping my stand up too, but by learning better leverage and stuff like that. So I don't, Yeah. So that's kind of my a big piece of my background.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, say what you will about the early UFC and that, you know, yeah, it was essentially a commercial for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but
yep.
One of the things that, you know, the big thing that came out of that is realizing that it's not just, you know, one style doesn't have everything, and that, you know, you do have to, you know, modify and grow with the times and be able to fight in the different ranges. And, you know,
yep.
I love Kenpo, you know, so much, but, you know, it doesn't answer every question. Yep. The same with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu doesn't answer every, you know, situation. And you can say that with any, that's kind of one of the beauties of Ed Parker is that, you know, he really was visionary in understanding kind of where things are going and just this, you know, traditional whatever wasn't the answer to every situation and could, you know what makes a better fighter, better self-defense and a better art, and was able to, you know, express that and continually evolve the art. And it's always kind of funny to me about the drama over, you know, traditional, you know, oh well, you know, Mr. Parker wouldn't want Poe to be this way, or, you know, he would never. And it's like the reason, kind of one of the reasons why he's so, you know, beloved is because he was constantly evolving and constantly changing things. And not to say that just forget all the traditional stuff, but, you know, everything has its place. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why, like, I see MMA as its own thing, because it's lost some of that, traditional, I don't know, respect or the Mr. Miyagi, you know, lifestyle. Yeah. But yeah, you have all these different kind of arts mixed into it, but I don't see it as a martial art. I see it, you know, as a combat sport. And yeah. I wish that we would get a little bit more of that, I don't know, humbleness or just kind of respect for, you know, the art and each other. Now it's just more about, oh well, you know, I can beat this guy up, and yeah. It's like, oh, well, you know, that's doesn't really, that does, in the, you know, that's, I would certainly like to see less of the infighting and whatnot, but, you know, we'll stay away from the drama and the politics. But
yeah, that's the thing. I was lucky, was being a just a color belt and stuff. I kept out a lot. I just wasn't around the drama. You know what I mean? I heard Ed Parker say a few things to people in front of me, and I just never repeat them. You know, and it wasn't bad. Just there's politics crap always going on, that stuff. But I try to keep the positive side of things. And, like, you know, Ed Parker was always trying to improve. And so, you know, all the positive sides of things, that's what I always kind of do for him and give him credit. And you know, other people can say, you know, oh, you should be doing this, Scott, or that, or whatever. It's like we can all have our own journey, but, you know, I give him total respect for the way I teach, you know, and I can teach Kenpo stuff. I can teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I can teach marketing, sales, and a lot of that's heavily influenced by just the way he taught. You know, and then, like, for example, he named a lot of the techniques. He had to really know where they came from to kind of remember what they were. But I took that. And when I would teach at the gatherings, I would teach kids and adults, and I would have fun names for them, like backpack with Velcro, sissy kicks, kangaroo kicks, Superman, Spider-Man. I mean, I named a whole bunch of stuff. And then once I taught you the move, you go, holy crap, I get it. You know, it totally makes sense why you call it that. And that helps, especially people just because a lot of people weren't, you know, they did mainly Kenpo, and there's adding in some ground fighting. So I had to teach them stuff really quickly, give them the stuff that, you know, that's the most important stuff they're going to remember. And so I even remember once when I had a guy that came in and we did Kempo in the front, and then I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in the back, and I'd help out in the front sometimes. I had a guy come in, and I think he was a high school wrestler or something one time, but that was years before. And he was stretching out and stuff and watching me teach a kid class before his class. And he said, "Ugh, this is depressing." I go, "What?" He goes, "You're teaching the kids the same things you're teaching me." Because I was teaching him like Spider-Man, Superman, all this stuff. And that same guy went down his first year, and I can't remember how many matches, but he got not one point scored. And I asked him, what did he do? He just said Spider-Man and Superman, all this stuff. Anyway, but again, all that stuff was from Ed Parker, just the way he taught and broke things down and used metaphors and analogies to teach better. You know, it's like they always say, you know, you're painting a picture in your mind. And he was just, again, his teaching, that's what I focus on is his teaching methodologies were just brilliant. And so if you want to do Kempo exactly the way it is, then you better, you know, you'll be able to learn it better if you follow his teachings.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm, you know, trying to really just grasp everything. You know, like I mentioned before, I'm just picking up so much more now because of, you know, the principles and the kind of the framework, as opposed to, you know, yeah, I was, you know, doing the techniques and, you know, kind of doing the air karate, and I learned a lot, but it was just the how and not the why. And that's huge. And once you start understanding the why, it just gives you so much of a greater understanding of how everything works, how everything fits together. One of the things I've really always loved about Kempo is that it's a great base for, you know, connecting other things. Yeah, if you want to get in some jiu-jitsu, you want to get in Muay Thai or, you know, whatever art. Who's actually speaking with another guest, and I brought up dating myself the Panther Productions videos back in the day.
That is old school.
And
I forgot about those. Holy smokes.
Yeah, no. Me and a buddy of mine, those were our things. Anytime we could get our hands on one.
Man, that is like, I'd forgotten about those.
But I remember watching a video of David German, and he was talking about combining jiu-jitsu with Kempo. And I'll never forget, he added on some wrist locks and some arm bars to Flashing Wings. And I saw that, and that was like one of the greatest things ever. And so me and my buddy, we would kind of go off to the side, you know, after class or whatnot, or before class. And we were just like, okay, here's, you know, how are we going to come up with a self-defense technique against, you know, a straight punch, or, you know, okay, we got to grab, and we just try and find all these, you know, kind of variations of how to alter, you know, alter our techniques. And then it's just like, no matter what kind of style or move I saw in a movie or something, try and just plug it into Kempo technique, and it just always fit every time. And so I've always really loved and appreciated that, and it keeps me coming back to it all the time. So
yeah, and one he did this a couple times at one seminar specifically, man, it was years ago, so again, I was color belt or something, he was like, I'm trying to remember if Skip is there too. I'm trying to remember. Rulin was there for sure. Anyway, I don't remember. I just know that he kind of goes, hey, because he taught something, and then everybody's, you know, practicing what he's doing, and he goes, hey, I knew it was Rulin. I said, come here. And then he shows us, now this, that's okay, but here, look at this. And he's showing us little details how to make a smaller circle and stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought, anyway, that was kind of cool. Is it kind of like, would show us a little, like, you know, here's the base stuff. You have everybody in the base. And then he was always kind of sprinkling in little for the, and we again, we went to a lot of seminars. So pretty soon, again, he used me a body a lot, and he just pretty soon a constant. So that was kind of cool that, again, I'm such a fan of his that whenever he did anything like that, I was just eating it up. And then I sent you a picture, and I actually hid it for years because it was back before, you know, 35 millimeter cameras around and stuff, but the one it kicking at me. And, mm-hmm. and it was at Skip Hancock School. And I am, oh, and then anybody on this that listens to this, go to, my name is Scott Marker, and go to my Facebook page. And I have like a tribute on there to Ed Parker. And I have just a lot of unique pictures of just behind the scenes stuff at the internationals. And just, a lot of times I'd ask him, like, say, hey, can I take a picture? Yeah, you can take my picture. And I said, can you do something different? Because he would just do a, you know, the same old pose every time. So mm-hmm. do something different. So I told you this story, it was great. So I'm in Skip's studio with a 35 millimeter camera. And I said, hey, can I get a picture of you? But could you do something different? He goes, yeah. Are you ready? And I go, yeah. And he freaking spins around and kicks straight at my face. And it's a one in a million shot. It took, I got his foot there. His belt's flying. I mean, it's just awesome. It was, anyway, yeah, so yeah, that was a, I got a lot of, anyway, anybody wants to have some, like, see some unique pictures and stuff, go ahead and check that out. But no, back, totally agree. Is that, yeah, that the Kempo, again, I think people are short-sighted sometimes, is that, again, you know, if you're going to do Kempo and stuff, do Kempo and stuff. But again, that a lot of the stuff he teaches can be applied. Again, marketing and sales. That's, you know, nothing to do with anything. The way, you know, I changed sophisticated basics to refined basics, but still it's the same thing. Is it's just, you know, taking a basic concept and then trying to make it better. And just anyway, and using stories and metaphors and analogies or stories, and metaphors are like, you know, have abs of steel. And things like that. He did such a great job of doing that, because especially when you're teaching physical emotion sometimes and trying to get someone to understand, you know, his saying, to hear is a doubt, to feels, to hear is a doubt, to see is be deceived, but to feel is to believe. And so sometimes it's just tough, you know, without beating people up.
Yeah.
You know, a certain way to do technique. But I'm telling you, that's something where, for example, I was always trying to, so for example, thundering hammers, I got thundering hammers down pretty good. And I watched Mike Pick do it. It's like, something's different about what he's doing. And I didn't connect these two. And I'm not saying he even did it. But the one thing that I did is I had an 80 pound heavy bag in my garage. And I learned really quick that if you have your arms straight and you hit something, it just freaking kills your arm. You have to bend it. And so how did I learn that? Was by hitting something. Exactly. And so, I mean, something hard. And again, you got to be careful with your partners. You know what I mean? You can't beat the crap out of your partners and stuff. So how do you, anyway, so I encourage anybody in Kempo to, you know, think, open your mind a little bit and stuff, but also try to incorporate like bags and stuff. I mean, some people are probably doing it, but we were doing it way back. I mean, back in like the late 90s, is that doing five swords or whatever technique you're doing, have the person hold some mitts so you can hit them, you know, you know, practice on them, but then hit it anyway. And again, it will, Ed Parker's saying, feel as believe. When you actually hit something, kicking back to kicking set, if you're having your students practice kicking set, okay, that's good for form and stuff out in the, but have them practice on a bag. It will help them adjust what they're doing, so that when they do spar and they want to kick somebody, it'll be a lot closer. Anyway, so
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I just took my green belt test, and
oh, congratulations!
You know, I've been doing this, you know, for a while now, and you think you have a pretty good grasp on it, but then, you know, on the test, you know, I had to do all my techniques on a live person. And it's like, oh, like, you know, I got, you know, Reiki mace down to no problem. And then not doing the air karate, then it's like, oh, wait a second, this is a lot different than yeah, I played it out in my head, you know. And so that's been a real change for me, a real eye opening versus my previous training, was that, you know, yeah, doing it on a person is very, very different. And you really don't get the same understanding of the mechanics of a technique until you know doing it on a person. So
but I say you do both. And the green belt, let me tell you a quick story on that green belt, is I was a body for a brown belt test. I don't remember, this has been so many years ago. And so I was a body. and did, you know, and then they had me do some stuff, forms and all that type of stuff. And then and we got done with it. He came out and he, I was a blue belt. He awarded me a green belt. He said I looked super good. And anyway, excellent. So that was probably one of my proudest times is when he promoted me, because he wasn't my instructor. Skip was, mm-hmm. but Skip was, you know, he was, you know, Skip was a student of Ed Parker. But I'm sure, you know, if Ed Parker tells Skip, hey, I think we need to promote Scott, Skip would have said, okay. You know what I mean? Anyway, so that was so my green belt. So I have to look at the certificate too, because I'm one of those pack rats that mm-hmm. I kept every single certificate. I have every belt and every certificate because some people skip a lot of his, even though I was a skip student, but I wasn't directly there. I was kind of, anyway, indirect mm-hmm. student. Some of his guys used to dye the belts, but I actually kind of stayed with what Daryl used to do, which every belt you got, you got a new belt every time you got promoted. So mm-hmm. I was out in my shed and I was like, open up this box and all my martial arts weapons and stars and all my belts are in there. And I'm like, wow. So it was kind of cool because I hung them all the way up, you know, yellow to black. And then on the black, and this I got from Mike Pick is, and again, I know him. He probably wouldn't know me, but he heavily influenced me just on his motion and stuff like that. But one thing I liked that he did was, maybe now he's doing something different, but not when he was coming up, is that he didn't wear any stripes on his belt. So when I got my black belt, I took off my stripes, and I've been promoted several times since, and I never put, so he influenced me. Just, I don't know why I just never, never wore stripes. I was focusing on being as good as I could be and as good as an instructor as I could be. And sometimes I thought, I don't know, sometimes people got caught up too much in their rank. So I thought, I'm just going to put it aside. And again, overall, I'm really lucky because, I just didn't get a lot of politics. I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, just in my own little world. Go up there and train, you know, like I said, him and his family were just super cool to me. I can't think. I mean, I appreciate this because going back through, it was such an honor that he did so many things and trusted me so much. And again, I was just a little green belt. And now he just trusted me so much.
We all got to start somewhere, so that's good.
I could have got my black belt underneath him. So I was really bummed out that he passed because I wanted to. But then it was cool that Skip got all those high ranking black belts together, and even Beth there and his daughter, one of his daughters, Beth there to kind of be part of the whole thing. So that was kind of cool. And at the time, I knew John Sepulveda because he actually lived down. He lives here again. He lives here, and we had lunch a few months ago because I had someone posted. Skip has Ed Parker photos. Skip, I didn't know Skip did it until yesterday, and he has all these photos of Ed Parker posted there on Facebook. Lots of cool photos, and there was it's after he passed away, but internationals like program, and John Sepulveda and somebody else is on the front, and I said, hey, I got one of those, and John said, I gave my copy to Skip or something. And I'm like, anyway, bottom line was, I told him, I said, hey, come over and let's go to lunch and I'll give you the program. So I gave him the program. Anyway, but it was kind of cool. Cause then anyway, it was what a word of respect because I got, he was there, he signed off on it and Paul Mills signed off on it. And then that's when after that, I kind of watched Paul Mills and it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen Paul Mills when he was alive, but man, he was like explosive. Do you ever watch him?
Yeah. I've seen some of his
stuff. He was a different level when it comes to the power, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen anything but the fast draw, but if you go on, he was a fast draw, like one of the top in the nation and all this stuff. And he was up at Skip's once for a seminar, and Ken. He I don't know. I'm not gonna. He explained why this this technique worked, and he hit him in the mm-hmm. stomach before he chopped him in the neck. And I mean, it was like, poof. I mean, it was so fast. I mean, he would go up, right? And then he'd go down and hit him in the stomach and then go back up and chop him in the throat. I mean, it was like blink. And I'm like, holy smokes. And, you know, a lot of times people are in Kippa are really fast, but they don't have any power. And so Ken Martin, he had this philosophy head that he pulls it so fast that it pulls your blood. I don't know if it's true or not true. I just know it's mm-hmm. supposed to make you sick and all this stuff. And so Ken's going, and he goes, anybody want to feel it? And Ken goes, I'll try it. So he does a technique, and it's blinding fast. I bet not just to, anyway. And Ken then drops to one knee and just said, he said it was weird. It wasn't like he got hit but it made him sick to his stomach. Mm. Anyway, so yeah. So Paul Mills, I was fortunate to have those type of people.
Good deal. All right. So to kind of close things, got a few, little fun questions to throw at you. One would be a favorite technique, or if you can't pick one, maybe, you know, two or three of your favorite techniques.
Well, in the olden days, Flashing Mace was the one that I thought was so cool because he did a variation of it in Pink Panther, one of the Pink Panther movies. Mm-hmm. He did it, but he hit him low. So that was one of my favorites. Thundering Hammers I like because of Mike Pick, Senior Grandmaster Mike Pick. But I liked real simple ones later in life because I'm like, if I got an altercation, Mace of Aggression, I'm telling you, I because of Mike Pick's influence and stuff, and Skip too, that I could hit really, and I practice hitting a bag I don't want to fight, and then I mean that's probably one of my favorites because I got it down to where I really, if I got an altercation, I really felt that I could put the one whack and then I could do the rest, but just that one initial move, I would be definitely in the winner's seat.
Gotcha. Next one would be, do you have a favorite form and or set?
I actually stopped doing the forms. Once I got my black belt, then I kind of dumped them and I stopped doing them. Mm-hmm. But I always liked, short form one because I did it with strikes. And so I would, and I would do it like moving forward, not back. So I do it backwards and forward. So I like, but I kind of changed the variation. I kind of modified short one a lot and taught it a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. So that was one of, and I did all those other forms. But that was one of my favorite ones because I thought those basic movements, I could strip them out and then teach them like how to hit people with them, be offensive versus defensive.
Gotcha. Okay. And then last one, if there is someone that you wish that you could have trained with, whether they be currently alive or dead, or fictional or non-fictional, or maybe even possibly somebody that you have actually trained with before, who's somebody that you wish you could train with?
Man, I'll tell you, I just, you know, Paul Mills and Mike Pick, I would have liked to. I mean, I went to seminars with them, but I never really trained. Either one of those two would have been fun just to kind of see if I could pick up different ways, you know. So those are two that I watched a lot of people work on bodies, and those two people, a lot of people work really fast, blah 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 blah, and the guy just stands there. But I watched both of them; they could like move a guy's body with the power. So probably either one of those two would have been fun to work out with, just to see if I could, you know, add more to my game.
Awesome. Oh, thank you so much for your time and your stories. And
I really appreciate it, Reggie. And again, I hate to dump all the stories on you, but it's like, there's so many unique stories that I just like, I haven't really talked about a lot of them. I mean, to one off to people, but never. Mm-hmm. And just what a wonderful person he was, and a lot of his family.
Yeah, no, I love the stories. I love hearing them. My wish is for this, you know, to be a platform for people to share the stories, you know. And something that I definitely want for this is to kind of get the wide spectrum. I mean, you know, obviously I'm going to try and get, you know, the OGs and the kind of people
Dennis
that
Dennis
Kanasser
is an OG. I won't go too much in this. I had some stuff that Skip gave me that had like history. I mean, just like association that made Ed Parker a master. And I'm like, holy smoke. I mean, not that just anyway. And I call up Dennis. Holy smokes. That guy, again, he's an encyclopedia. He just anyway. Yeah. So I encourage you to get him on because
I'm definitely going to reach out to him.
And he was an international champion. He fought a lot. And yeah, he just brings a lot to the game. And he's a Kempo. He's a Kempo. I mean, he bleeds Kempo.
So, I like it. Okay. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything else that maybe you wanted to throw out there?
Want to thank for the opportunity and thanks for just sharing and let me remember again how lucky I was. I really was. I was very lucky. I know a lot of people that never got to work out with them or train with them. And I feel this privileged.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And
thank you.
We will talk again soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Reggie.
Thank you.